Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Jessica Leahy is an author of a book called The Addiction Inoculation. Think about that. Wouldn't it be nice if we could inoculate somebody from addictions, raising healthy kids in a culture of dependence? She's actually hosting a virtual event tonight. It's at 7 o'clock, and you can dial in through the Glenn Bard Parenting Series to talk about your kids and addiction and prevention. There's an interesting piece about her in People magazine that I'll refer to in a minute, too. But before we do any of that, let's say hello to Jessica. You're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You are a alcoholic or recovering alcoholic yourself?
I am. I will have 8 years in just about a month.
And yet you were the person who in your family, according to your book and story, was not going to be the alcoholic. You come from a family of alcoholics and
yes.
I was going to say substance users or abusers, although I don't know that that's the same thing. But you said, I'm not going to be that person. And for a long time, you weren't, right?
I did a very good job of hanging on to the abstinent end of the spectrum for a really long time. But it just, I wish I had an easy answer to how it happened, but it just snuck up on me. And in my 40s, I found that I was drinking more than a bottle of wine every day. It was pretty bad.
You were enjoying wine at first. You didn't go hard charging into alcohol. You weren't a big drinker in high school or college, right?
No, I wasn't. In fact, I was one of those obnoxious peer counselors in high school and college who would help other people stay away from drinking. I was full on into the obnoxious sort of, you know, abstinent person mode.
But the fact that you were so aware of it, given your family history and the life you set out to live, and then you said, well, I'm still just going to have a little bit of wine. My husband and I enjoy a nice bottle of red. You would think then that a person would be able to not drink to excess. It almost makes it sound genetic or something that a person can't control.
It turns out, actually, the genetics is about 50 to 60% of the risk picture when it comes to substance use disorder. And after that, then there's all sorts of other risk factors that are sort of part of environment and the things we experience, like adverse childhood experiences, you know, bad experiences we have as a kid that contribute to risk over one's lifetime. But yeah, so genetics is a big part of it.
What was it like for you as a kid? You grew up around alcohol, did you?
I did. I had a parent who's an alcoholic in recovery now, and one of my parents was raised by an alcoholic who never got into recovery. So, yeah, it was something that, you know, when I finally got control of my own drinking, well, never really got control of it. I stopped and looked around. I realized, wait a second, you know, is this going to end with me? How do I make this end with me? And so my focus shifted to how we prevent substance abuse in kids. And I was really fortunate to also be working in a drug and alcohol rehab for adolescents. So I was their teacher. So I was raising two kids that I was trying to figure out how to protect. And then at the same time, trying to figure out how my students ended up in my classroom.
Wow. As you yourself came to struggle with alcohol yourself.
Yeah, I got sober in 2013. So I started teaching those kids once I had a year of recovery under my belt. But I think my shift to kids, and I've been a teacher. I was a teacher for 20 years. So my focus is often on, you know, how to help my students and how to help my kids. But it wasn't until I really got some space from my drinking that I was able to start thinking clearly about the evidence. And I wanted to figure out, you know, when the experts say substance abuse is preventable, what that means. What does the research say we can control, and what can we not control, and what are the myths and what are the realities?
Yeah, one more question before you address that, but is there the hope that we would find the genetic link, that 50 to 60% button, and turn it off? Wouldn't it be nice if we could get a vaccine for this?
Oh, it would be so great. Unfortunately, the genetics for substance use disorder are not, it's not like there's one gene that even with this new technology we have called CRISPR that we could just, you know, flick that gene out and then we could be done with it. It's various genes. It's also this thing called epigenetics and in terms of how our genes express. But actually, the word inoculation is in the title not because of, you know, sort of a literal literal vaccination, but because there's this thing called inoculation theory that's a really important part of teaching kids how to have refusal skills and how to help them feel empowered that they can have control over their decisions and how they respond to, you know, would you like to have a taste of this alcohol? It's no big deal. Everybody's doing it. Empowering kids seems to be a really important part of prevention.
Okay, so then give me those things. Tell me how I empower those kids in a minute. It's 10:41. Get ready to write some of this down. Call those parents of the teens if they're not listening right now. Jessica Leahy is the author of The Addiction Inoculation. She's going to be speaking at 7 o'clock tonight in a virtual session that you can dial into through the Glenn Bard Parenting Series. I'll tell you how to do that in a minute. This is WGN. Jessica Leahy's on a phone line. She's the author of a book called The Addiction Inoculation, Raising Healthy Kids in a Culture of Dependence. She's hosting a virtual event tonight at 7 o'clock through the Glenn Bard Parenting Series to talk about your kids and addiction and prevention. And you said inoculation is actually kind of a series of techniques, it sounds like, Jessica. If we know these or pass them on to our kids, we've got a better chance of inoculating them from dependency, huh?
It's true. It's really cool. It's this thing called inoculation theory. And when we empower kids with sort of the tools to rebut the entreaties to use or to do all kinds of other risky behaviors like have sex before they're ready or get in a car with a drunk driver. If we empower them with answers to, you know, how they should respond when someone offers that up to them, then it actually protects them not only from the thing we're trying to specifically protect them from, but all kinds of other risky behaviors like the ones I mentioned. So it's a really powerful strategy of making our kids feel empowered, giving them a sense of self-efficacy, and giving them real answers to the questions that people may ask them about their use and of substances. It's really quite powerful.
So how does it work? Give me an example. Where do you start?
So let's say, for example, you know that one of the things that kids might hear is, oh, come on, it's just alcohol. It's no big deal. Everybody's doing it. And let's say you have an eighth grader. And by the way, middle school is the time when kids start experimenting. So if we're waiting until middle school to start talking to them about it, we're waiting a little bit too late. But if we know our kid might hear, you know, come on, everybody's doing it. And our kid happens to know, for example, that that's not true, that only 24% of middle kids in eighth grade admit that they've had alcohol by the end of eighth grade. And they have an answer to that question, or they have an excuse for how they can get out of it while saving face. And believe me, there are lists of excuses you can get out of having a drink or using drugs while saving face in the book, then that means that they're not only more likely to say no to, and I hate to use that phrase because just say no doesn't work, but to say no to that substance, they're also more likely to be protected from all kinds of other risky behaviors, for example, the premature sex or, you know, getting in a car with a drunk driver.
So do you say the same thing, say premature sex or getting in a car with a drunk driver? If the child has some statistic at the ready, they can say, no, this might lead to pregnancy, or no, we might get into a crash. Does it work that way?
No, it's not just the statistic. It's the sort of powerful feeling of knowing they have an answer. And I give a whole bunch of scripts in the book, but some of them are things like, you know, that's okay, I can't drink because I have, for example, I can't have a beer because I'm gluten intolerant, or I can't have a drink because I have an allergy to alcohol, or I'm on a medication that makes it that I can't drink. Or my kids in the past have thrown me under the bus and said, no, thanks, I'd rather not. My mom's an alcoholic, and so I just, you know, right now I'm just not going to do that. Or I have a track practice first thing in the morning, or there's all kinds of really cool excuses that you can give that have nothing to do with, oh, no, I'm not a drinker. There are ways that you can help empower kids to have excuses for why they don't want to do something that actually makes them feel more powerful and not queasy about, you know, their image.
Is it troublesome, though, that some of those excuses are not true?
Oh, no, I'm talking, I mean, you don't have, some of those excuses, there are plenty of those excuses that are actually applicable. It turns out there is an allergy to alcohol, for example, if you
So find the one that's appropriate. Yeah, I thought you were just
right,
suggesting
exactly,
those
exactly.
In any case.
And frankly, as far as my kids are concerned, if a little white lie gets them out of a risky behavior, I'm all for the little white lie.
Well, maybe that's the first step. I mean, there's got to be more to it than this, right? What else does inoculating your kids entail? Give me more.
So it turns out that the most powerful substance abuse prevention programs that we have, and by the way, Only 57% of schools are using any substance abuse prevention program. And of that 57%, only 10% are evidence-based. So the ones that are evidence-based and have been proven by objective sort of third parties looking at them to be effective start really, really young. You need to start talking to kids about substances and their body and what we put in our body and why. And, you know, for example, why we spit the toothpaste out instead of swallowing it. Things about what the things we put in our body make a difference to our health from a really, really young age. And then it develops over time. But that along with the kids. But talking to kids about these things from a very early age not only makes these conversations a little less oogie for the parents and the kids, it makes it so that it actually can follow the kids in a developmentally appropriate way. And it's not just that sort of like, okay, now we're going to sit down and have that talk. Because just like the sex talks, it's more than one conversation, and those need to go throughout our lifetime. But also understanding our kids' individual risk and how we can combat it with very specific preventions, and there's a whole bunch of them, that's really, really powerful, too. We need to understand our kids, where they come from a risk perspective, and then use the preventions that work really well to combat those specific risks. And that's really what the bulk of the book is about.
Jessica Leahy's an author and expert on how to inoculate your kids, that is, give them the tools to keep them from engaging in risky behaviors, addiction inoculation, everything from alcohol to some of these other things she's talking about. I do like that sort of clinical, information-based reasoning with your kids. Not that that is a panacea, but if you said to the kids, humor me here. Here's what happens when smoke gets into your lungs at a micro level and how that will, you know, follow you for the rest of your life. Or here's what happens to your brain when you get alcohol in it. I wonder if telling the kids that somehow shapes their opinion about using those things.
Well, it turns out actually that the most effective prevention programs actually are evidence and data-based. Not that you're giving your kids statistics, but you're helping them understand that when we talk about why kids shouldn't use drugs and alcohol, we're not talking about adult brains. We're talking about adolescent brains. And things that may have very low risk in adult brains can still have short and long-term damage to an adolescent brain because it's still developing.
Right.
And understanding also that with each passing year of adolescence, we lower a kid's lifelong risk of developing substance use disorder. The more time we get with a kid who doesn't start using drugs and alcohol, the longer we protect their brain and we lower their risk of substance use disorder over their lifetime. So giving kids information is really, really important and very powerful to helping them be able to weigh more evenly the decisions they have to make about whether or not they use drugs and alcohol.
What about this?
Just say no doesn't work.
Understood. And listen, I've heard you say that twice, and you can say it three times for all I care. I think that's because I do think that that was a myth. But I also think what we are all up against is everybody knows you shouldn't smoke. They've seen the commercials. They still do, less now than ever before. But I wonder how we'll ever get over that. Kids making bad decisions, or maybe it's them thumbing their nose at the authority, which they know knows better. But that's why they're doing this. They're going to be counterintuitive that way. How do we get over that?
There's a lot in the book about understanding how adolescents in particular weigh risks and benefits. And, you know, adolescents are wired for novelty. That's the job of being an adolescent, is to individuate from your parents and become your own person. And that requires you to take some risks and try novel things. But at the very heart of this book is the understanding that if we help kids feel like they are enough, that they are empowered, that they have what's called self-efficacy. When they feel like they deserve to take up space in the world and they have a place in the world, then they are going to be a lot less likely to feel like they need to use drugs and alcohol, either to impress someone else or to heal whatever the hole they have inside of themselves, whether that's because they don't feel like they're enough or it's depression or anxiety or whatever that hole is. So helping kids from a very early age, either whether it's through early interventions or stepping in and making sure they have allies, that's at the heart of this book, is helping kids feel like they're enough so that they don't have to use drugs and alcohol in order to feel like they're more than they are normally.
Well, Jessica, is this true? When I see people smoking these days, especially these days, I just think that is a child with a self-esteem issue. Is there some truth to that?
You know, it's about something more than just self-esteem. It's about the fact that, number one, kids are still being marketed to really aggressively, both for cigarettes and drugs and alcohol, just because we don't see those ads on television for cigarettes anymore. We are still seeing ads on television for alcohol, and we're seeing them especially in the context of sports. And these companies understand, you know, very deeply that the earlier they can establish brand loyalty, the better. And as long as we understand that it's never too early to talk about how, you know, advertising works and how kids are being manipulated, give authority figures the finger, to so to speak, to talk to them a little bit about how you are being manipulated. And let's talk about how advertising is manipulating you in order to get you to use these things, because it makes them a lot of money. So that's another way that we can use adolescents' obstinacy for our benefit when we're trying to keep them safe.
One more thing, then. How much impact does my having alcohol around my kids? I'm not giving them the beer, but they're watching me have a beer. How problematic is that?
Oh, it has nothing to do with the actual drinking in front of them. It's about the messaging around the drinking. So if you're coming home and you're saying, you know, I had a really rough day and I need this glass of wine, or we're going to grandma's house for Thanksgiving and I am going to need some wine to get through this day. Those sort of messages about using alcohol in order to either numb out our feelings, to avoid our emotions, to be able to cope with the world, that's sending a message of, I'm using alcohol in order to not deal with this stuff. And that's a message that's really problematic. But for example, in our house, I don't drink at all, obviously, but my husband drinks like a completely normal person in front of them. And that's 100% fine, as long as the messaging is clear that it's about healthy drinking and not drinking in order to obliterate our emotions or not feel things that we really do need to deal with.
You don't mind him drinking in front of you, huh?
No, he actually, we have a really interesting situation. Today actually is our 25th wedding anniversary. And for example, on our 25th wedding anniversary, he may well bring home part of like a split of wine or a beer to celebrate. But he will pour out what he doesn't drink, because he doesn't want me to have to deal with the fact that there's open alcohol in the house. So we don't keep open alcohol in the house.
Jessica Leahy's book is The Addiction Inoculation: Raising Healthy Kids in a Culture of Dependence. You can find out how to dial in at 7 o'clock tonight. It's through the Glenbard Parenting Series by going to glenbardgps.org. glenbardgps.org. Jessica, well done. Really interesting, really helpful. I'm glad you were able to join us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
I think a lot of folks in Chicago will appreciate that tonight. 7 o'clock, glenbardgps.org.